since this is supposed to be the season of giving, give to us financially so we could provide you the information that you get usually from us since 1960. The website you could check out is buddy.wbai.org. That's buddy.wbai.org. Or you can always call this number, 833-922-4692, 833-922-4692, or 833-WBAI-NYC. That's 833-WBAI-NYC. Okay, enough of that chitter-chatter. We're going to go into the special, Equal Time for Free Thought, Naturalistic Christmas Special, and that's coming up. So here we go. This is WBAI New York. It's 1 minute past 3 p.m.
You're listening to 99.5 FM, WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener-sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
Now stay tuned for Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special.
Girl, why are you so sad? It's Christmas.
My family doesn't celebrate Christmas.
Oh, Jewish?
Uh-uh.
Muslim?
Uh-uh.
Buddhist?
Nope. My family doesn't practice any religion, and we don't believe in things that are supernatural.
But haven't they heard? There are many ways to enjoy and celebrate Christmas that are completely naturalistic.
Really?
Really! And this Christmas, they can learn all about having a perfectly wonderful naturalistic Christmas on Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special.
Naturalistic Christmas Special?
That's right!
When?
Right now!
Yay!
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our Naturalistic Christmas Special. I'm Arnell Doré, and I'm joined by our co-hosts Sharon Stanley and Elaine Durbach. Hi, Elaine and Sharon.
Hi.
Good, hi, you're still here. Okay, because it was a little dicey there in the last show. We haven't done one of these specials since Christmas of 2019, but today we're back on the air, coming to you live on this Christmas Day. And as usual, our sleigh overfloweth with goodies, including an interview with Santa Claus and a special celestial holiday interview with Distinguished Professor of Astronomy, Dr. Chris Impey. And later, we'll be taking your calls as well. Let me just make that second. We're going to make our bed a little lower here. Okay. Of all religious holidays, Christmas lends itself to a naturalistic reinterpretation particularly well because Christmas itself is a reinterpretation, a mashup, and a best of many earlier traditions. If we consider its true origins, Christmas is neither about crash commercialism or about a supernatural birth of a deity. Christmas is actually far bigger and far older than Christianity. Long before anyone ever heard the name of Jesus, let's just make this a little lower. There we go. Long before anybody ever heard of Jesus, people over the world knew that Christmas time, this time of year that we call Christmas now, was special. A holiday occurring on or near the winter solstice, the astronomical event marking the shortest day of the year and the longest night of the year, most recently known as Christmas, has been observed by ancient people on every continent dating back as far as 10,000 years. The Christmas time holiday observance originated when humans began to notice the behavior of the heavens at the time of the winter solstice, marking the turning point between days that were darkening ever earlier and the days that began getting longer. The winter solstice was immensely important because people were economically dependent on monitoring the progress of the seasons. From a naturalistic perspective, reaching the tipping point in the Earth's rotation around the sun, when the world quite literally begins its move toward more light than darkness, is a moment bursting with hopeful symbolism and a great reason to celebrate. Like earlier traditions, naturalistic Christmas declares victory over the darkness and a hope for a better tomorrow. As it is, Christmas is a composite of many Western and Near Eastern traditions and practices deliberately designed to transcend cultural boundaries. In trying to create a holiday that was universally appealing and irresistible, and to facilitate the participation of widely different groups of people that the church wanted to assimilate, early church leaders appropriated many unrelated practices and traditions from the religions and spiritual traditions which Christianity sought to replace, and it made them part of Christmas. The result is that today's Christmas celebration is essentially a pan-regional, multi-generational, best of traditions past. And that's part of why Christmas appeals to a wide diversity of people. A naturalistic Christmas celebrates our persistence over darkness with festive lights and with a tree that survives all winter long. We can also demonstrate our joy and affection for all of those who have made the year better for us by gift giving, sharing special experiences such as a holiday party, and by visiting family, neighbors, and friends and inviting them into our homes. At gatherings, we can reflect on the years past and make projections about our hopes for the future. Some may want to enjoy a meditation together, and singing Christmas songs with the group is always a delightful experience. To honor the ancient astronomers who first observed the winter solstice and began our epic journey toward trying to understand our place in the universe, we're provided with a wonderful occasion to appreciate the state of the art of that pursuit. And to that end, we're honored to present our interview with space scientist Dr. Chris Impey. Dr. Impey is a distinguished professor of astronomy at the University of Arizona with over 220 peer-reviewed publications on observational cosmology, galaxies, and quasars. He's a past vice president of the American Astronomical Society and a winner of its Career Education Prize. Dr. Impey has also written 100 popular articles on cosmology, astrobiology, and education, 2 textbooks, a novel, and 9 popular science books. Here is our interview. Hello, Dr. Impey, and thank you for joining us on Naturalistic Support.
Good to be with you.
First, can you tell us about the Hubble tension? I know that we've known about the Hubble tension for a couple of decades, but I understand that the James Webb Space Telescope and the Hubble Space Telescope are producing new relevant data. Is that what makes it a story of 2024?
It is coming from new data. So this has been an issue for several years, and it's heating up. I mean, we think we have a good picture of cosmology. We have a Big Bang model that's not really in doubt. We have measurements of dark matter and dark energy, which we don't know what they are, but we've measured their strength. And so that means you can make an expansion history of the universe. You can make a model for how the universe expanded. And the Hubble tension is a discrepancy that's not going away as the data gets better between one method of measuring the expansion rate of the universe in the nearby universe, and that one uses the Hubble Space Telescope, and more distant universe expansion rate, so earlier in the history of the universe. And you should be able to connect the dots between these two measurements. They should say the same thing, but they're discrepant at about 8% level. They don't measure the same expansion rate, and that's a problem because it should be just one model and it consistent. And, you know, people in astronomy are cautious because people have been snake-bit in the history of astronomy by systematic errors they didn't recognize and not enough data and overinterpreting data. But people are being pretty careful and cautious. And so just over the last 4 to 6 months, and even in papers as recent as a few weeks ago, this tension is just sharpened. It's just clear that there's a problem. And the way out, it doesn't look like the methods are in error. That's the basic point. And the way out is not very nice, actually. It means the cosmological model is in jeopardy. You have to introduce new physics into the universe or something strange about dark energy that we don't understand, perhaps maybe the fact that it changes over time, which we didn't expect. That would make it not like Einstein's cosmological constant. So the solutions to the Hubble tension are slightly uncomfortable because they imply the standard model of cosmology, which we know and love and have had for, you know, pretty much 50 years, is wrong at some deep level. Of course, the theorists love it when this happens because they get to roll out new ideas, and observers tend to get uncomfortable because they worry that they might be wrong. Theorists get excited because, it's new physics. And basically, the three categories of solution, the missing ingredient that could explain this, if assuming the data is right, is something going on with dark energy that we don't understand, probably it changing its strength with time. Gravity theory being wrong, modifications to the gravity theory, general relativity, that's pretty dramatic. Or undiscovered particles, fundamental particles that, you know, change the behavior of the universe. So they're all pretty interesting options.
Yeah, those solutions seem revolutionary, each one of them.
Yeah. Now, we know that there's some new physics anyway, because dark matter is not normal stuff. We've ruled out black holes and substellar objects and rocks in space and tiny dust particles. We've ruled out a lot of stuff. So dark matter is almost down to fundamental particles, too, unknown fundamental particles. And dark energy, we don't really have, is the Wild West. We really don't have much idea what dark energy is. So because we're ignorant about the two ingredients that account for 96% of the universe, you know, that's probably where the finger is pointing now. You know, people follow these stories and sometimes they just jump to the conclusion, like, the Big Bang is wrong. You know, we need to start from square one. I don't think it's that dramatic. There's so much good evidence that the universe had a hot, dense, early state 13.8 billion years ago. I don't think that part of the story is wrong, which is a big part of our story of cosmology. But as far as the ingredients of the universe and how they behave and what they're made of, yeah, we're still learning a lot, and we still have a lot of... They're not little gaps, they're big gaps in our knowledge.
Talking about the origin of the universe, you had mentioned cosmic dawn.
Right. So cosmology is a hot subject, literally and metaphorically, because as you go back in time, you go back to the early, hot, small, dense universe. And James Webb Space Telescope, was essentially pitched as a telescope that could see back in time and out in space further than Hubble, say, or a ground-based telescope. And that's partly because it's in space, partly because it's 6.5 meters, and Hubble is much smaller, and partly because it works in the infrared, and the expansion of the universe shifts early radiation, to redder wavelengths, which means infrared. So James Webb is perfectly built to look at the early universe, and it's been doing an amazing job, of course, since it was launched. But what it's been finding is getting a little provocative, because everyone knows that there's some point at which the first stars and galaxies formed, and we just thought it would be as simple as James Webb finding out when that was. Now, was it 100 million years after the Big Bang, or 500 million years after the Big Bang? It was pretty early on, first 5 or 3% of the universe. So that's what everyone expected. The problem is that it's been finding early galaxies that are very big and well-developed. And that's kind of uncomfortable for theorists and for observers as well, I guess, because the standard model of cosmology, where gravity forms things steadily over time, is called a hierarchical model, which means you form small things first, and the small things gather into bigger things and bigger things. So it takes a while to build a big galaxy like the Milky Way. It can't happen quickly. And so finding very big, well-developed galaxies very early on is problematic, and it's causing a lot of interest and excitement. It's not quite as dramatic for cosmology as the Hubble tension, but it's telling us we don't know really how galaxies form and grow. So I think most people are excited by what it's finding, but it's telling us again that there are sort of naive idea that you form small things first and they aggregate into bigger things, and it's steady and fairly slow, is not right. Somehow you have to be able to form big things very early. And that includes big black holes, because every galaxy, as far as we know, has a black hole in it. And those black holes grow sort of in alongside their galaxies, or within their galaxies at the center. So you can't really have very big black holes early in the universe either. And James Webb has seen billion solar mass black holes within 500 million years of the Big Bang. And that's really hard to grow a big black hole that quickly.
As frustrating as the confusion in our knowledge is, it seems very exciting too, because whenever you have a bunch of data that the existing methods of explanation aren't sufficient for, it seems like it gives birth to a whole new crop of theories.
Right, yeah.
Which is pretty exciting. Another big 2024 space event had to do with the Europa Clipper.
Yes, so in Planetary, we move from the distant universe to the nearby universe, Planetary Science. Planetary Science is doing really well, of course. You know, we have multiple rovers on Mars, and we're learning a lot about whether Mars might have had life in the distant past, or even might have it now, deep underground. But the outer solar system is really interesting. It's been, to many scientists or planetary scientists, it's been understudied, almost neglected. And Mars has got all the attention, like some favored child that gets all the love from the parents. We have all these missions to Mars, all these rovers. And it's simple. It's because it's only 50 million miles away, right? And it's an interesting planet that could well have had life and might still have life. The outer planets are billions of miles away, much harder to go there. These missions take, you know, close to a decade to plan. They take close to a decade to get where they're going. And so you have to have a real commitment to do these outer solar system missions. And we did some in the 70s and 80s. You know, we sent our first probes to the outer solar system in the 70s. And a couple, Uranus and Neptune, haven't had a close flyby since then. Meanwhile, people, astronomers, have realized that if you're talking about life in the solar system, and Mars is the place we're looking hard, there are all these ocean water worlds, if you like, or ocean worlds in the outer solar system. They're not planets. The gas giants are almost certainly uninhabitable. But they all have moons. And some of those moons are large and very interesting. And Europa almost stands out among them all because it's one of the Galileo, you know, the Galilean moons of Jupiter, the four discovered by Galileo. Mm. And it is a water world. It is fully covered by water, and it's not clear how deep that ocean is, maybe 10 to 50 kilometers. And it's overlain by 1 to 5 kilometers deep ice. So it's got an icy crust. It's got a liquid ocean around the whole moon. And there's heavy debate over whether there could be life in that ocean.
And the reason there's water underneath the ice is because there's internal activity because of the gravitational effect of Jupiter, right?
That's right. Actually, two pieces of that. There's stretching force, a tidal force caused by Jupiter, because Europa has a slightly elliptical orbit. And that's like if you took a racquetball or a squash ball and squeezed it over and over and over again, it's going to get warm. So these moons, not just Europa, but a lot of the moons in the outer solar system are on elliptical orbits. And so they're getting tidal forces that will heat them up. And then the other thing, of course, is they have rocky cores. And the rocks, as with the Earth, have radioactive material. So there's radioactive heating from the rocky material. So there's mild heating from the inside, from the core, and then external heating from the squeezing of the giant planet. And you put those two together, and it's still a pretty cold place, but obviously the water's liquid, so it's, you know, it's in a temperature range where you could have life if it were on Earth. And so the argument has now moved to, okay, we know there's a water under there, and actually there's almost a dozen outer solar system worlds of the giant planets that seem to have subterranean oceans. Enceladus does, it's a tiny little moon. Ganymede, which is a really big moon, and some of the Uranus and Neptune moons. So the conversation has shifted to, well, are the conditions right for life on the moon? And the evidence is very indirect because you just can't see into the ocean. We've never sampled them. We've never landed on these moons, including Europa. And so the Europa Clipper is just a big step forward in understanding whether Europa could host life. We can't oversell it. It's a great mission. It's been waiting for a while. It got delayed by a couple of years. It's going to take 7 or 8 years to get there. It's not really a life-finding mission. That would be overselling it. Just like the Mars rovers we have right now are not life-finding rovers. That's just a hard thing to do. But the Europa mission is going to study. It has very good instruments. It's going to do spectroscopy. It's going to do gravitometry. It's going to do radar mapping. It's going to do a lot of things to understand Europa better. And it is going to diagnose the likelihood that there's organic material in that subterranean ocean and say a lot of the salinity and the pH. It's going to measure various things indirectly but reliably that will give us a much better idea of whether in that ocean there might be biology.
Another big 2024 space story involved SpaceX Starship Flight 5 in October when its super heavy booster was caught with what they call chopsticks.
Right, the chopsticks maneuver. I mean, for people who haven't seen it, the video is, you know, jaw-dropping because you have to remember that this is a rocket that's the size of a skyscraper and you're guiding it down to the Earth under its own power. You know, within centimeters to reach that gantry and then to be caught by those tweezers or chopsticks. So that was, the jury is out on Elon Musk as a person, but as a technologist, his company is doing amazing things.
That leads me to another question about private exploration of an exploitation of space in general. It seems you are getting an acceleration of innovation that we weren't getting based on government programs. But at the same time, there seems to be issues with private individuals like Musk having so much power and so much influence that they can affect the outcome of wars, they can affect satellite information going back and forth. Does that bother you at all?
Yes. I mean, the concentration of power in any sector, in any industry, in one or two people is uncomfortable. I mean, the rival to SpaceX that you never hear as much about is Blue Origin, and that's Jeff Bezos. So, you know, is it an accident that the two most innovative private space companies are owned by the two richest people on the planet? Probably not, because they've invested their fortunes in this, and they're visionaries who want us to live off Earth eventually. I mean, it's a little more complicated than just Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos doing their entrepreneurial thing. SpaceX would probably have gone out of business by now if they didn't have multi-billion-dollar contracts from NASA to resupply the space station. So he's not had a revenue stream to speak of, and still doesn't. And his investors would probably have given up on him without that. So he needed, and probably still needs, NASA at some level, even though NASA's now cast as the sort of stodgy conservative agency that doesn't take risks and doesn't do anything quickly or well. That's very unfair. I'm caricaturing it. So, yes, his level of power is a little disconcerting.
How do you think artificial intelligence and its rapidly increasing progress is going to affect space exploration?
Well, it's having an effect already, because so many, I mean, it's having an effect in how people do the technology for space, because, you know, designing rockets is a difficult thing, and there's, you know, the engineering is very complicated. So AI is used in designing rockets and deciding how best to use them and so on. On the larger arena, I think it's going to be used to decide how best and safest to explore. And then the truth is, sending humans anywhere is expensive and difficult. Humans are fragile, needy creatures. You know, they have to have oxygen. They don't do well if there's no gravity. They have to be fed. All that weighs a lot, and launching mass into space costs energy and money. So the truth is, most of our exploration is true with the little rovers and robots that we see now, and the space probes, the outer solar system, which are unmanned. But I think extensively in the future, we're going to be sending probably miniaturized probes with AI built into them around the solar system, and maybe even beyond to the nearest stars. And the AI will, you know, it will be given its marching orders as it leaves the Earth, but then it's going to decide what's most interesting and what to do and how to digest the information on its own. And it will learn as it travels through the solar system and beyond.
Yeah, perhaps even the entire probe itself will be an AI with consciousness and be an entity in and of itself, sort of like HAL.
That's right.
I recently conversed with the director of the SETI Institute, Seth Shostak, and I was surprised that his belief that aliens would be rapacious conquerors or either annihilate us or enslave us, and the same thing for artificial intelligence, super artificial intelligence. Do you see it that way?
Not really. I think I've known Seth a long time. I appreciate him. But I don't agree with him, just because I think a lot of that is projection. When we hear that, that's projecting our misgivings, our fears onto something in the future. We're so ignorant about life beyond Earth. It's very crazy to ascribe motives to aliens of unknown function and form that are almost by definition more advanced than us. So I don't think we can anticipate them that well.
We definitely agree there. I get the feeling that, like me, you feel as if our human journey is just beginning.
Yeah, I prefer to be an optimist. I think this space program is a good example. It's really early days. It's too early to judge. I mean, think of the first half century of the space age. It was dominated by a sort of geopolitical pissing contest between Russia and the United States with heavy military overtones. It wasn't about exploration and Star Trek and boldly going anywhere. It was a different flavor beast. So that's not very noble or glorious. Now we have entrepreneurs and, you know, profit motive, I suppose. And maybe that's not very savory either. But it is early days. I think, people will do things. They'll make mistakes. They'll get some things wrong, and maybe they'll get some things right. And if we live off Earth, there'll be all these different experiments, I think. Eventually, some utopian societies will be created, and maybe some will end up being a little dystopian. You'll get all your science fiction variations played out in space in the next, decades. I'm not talking about this decade or even the next, but over the next 50 years, say. And that's exciting to think that's going to happen.
Yeah. Dr. MP, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks, Arnell. Fun to talk to you.
Listening to
Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special right here on 99.5
FM WBAI New York.
Not commercial, listener sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
And now, for a moment of celestial wisdom on this holiday, which calls for peace on Earth, let's listen to the words of the late, great Dr. Carl Sagan.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. How fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
Okay, after that, you may be ready for our naturalistic Christmas meditation. It's a guided meditation which begins with simply watching our breath, but then takes us on a journey far away and eventually brings us back. So if you need to get yourself into a more comfortable position, now is the time. Okay, if everyone is ready, then here we go. Let's close our eyes and breathe in deeply and slowly. And when you breathe out, try to empty your lungs completely. Then, without any effort at all, just let the air flow right back in. Remember to breathe in deeply and slowly. This is very important. However fast you're breathing, try to slow down. And try to breathe out even more slowly than you breathe in. Try to picture your breath, only your breath. Imagine your breath as if it were colored air. Perhaps you can imagine it as one color coming in and a different color as you breathe out. Try to only picture your breath. If there are distractions going on around you, such as ambulance sirens or barking dogs, and your mind goes to them, observe the distraction, but don't get involved with it. Just note where your mind wandered and look at it as if you were a third person observing the mind of another. The same is true. If your mind runs to other thoughts, such as thoughts about your life, just watch the thought and make note of where your mind wandered, as if to say, okay, that's interesting. Look at how my mind just went to something happening tomorrow or what I did last week. But do not get involved in these thoughts. After making note of where your mind went, bring it right back to this moment, to this breath, and keep breathing deeply and slowly. Along with the food we eat and the water we drink and the sunlight we absorb, the air we breathe in, breathe out of our bodies connects us to everything around us. Again, imagine your breath as colored air flowing in and flowing out. Imagine the breath you take in as filling you with energy. Not a supernatural energy, but the very real life sustenance we get from every breath we take. Picture every exhalation as emptying your body of everything it needs to let go of, including all of your thoughts which take you away from this moment.
picture your heart beating, pumping your blood through your entire body, all the way down to your toes, to your calves, your thighs, your butt, your belly, your back, your shoulders, your arms, and your fingers, up to your neck, to your face, and to the top of your head. Now imagine that you're floating right above yourself, watching as you meditate. And you can see yourself below. Imagine what the room looks like from above. Imagine how you look from above. Now imagine that you're looking at yourself from outside the window. Now imagine floating above the building you're in and seeing it from right above. How does it look? Now imagine floating high enough to see all of the houses or buildings on your block. And then, even higher, high enough to see your entire neighborhood, and then your entire city or town. And even higher, to see the entire part of the world in which you live. Now imagine floating high above the earth. And then, soaring down to the very top of the globe, the North Pole. Imagine soaring past an ocean of clouds, and then passing through miles of thick falling snow. You can tell it's windy and cold, but you hardly feel the wind or the cold. You come down all the way to the ground, where it's nighttime and the moon is full. And you're standing on white, fluffy snow. The snow is teeming down from the sky, and everywhere you look, all you can see is snow. And you start walking, and way in the distance, you see what looks like a blue neon glow. You walk toward it. And as you get closer, you can see that the glow is coming from an opening to something. And you keep walking toward it. And as you get closer, you can see that the blue glow is coming from a big, round igloo. And you keep walking toward it. And you come right up to the igloo and enter it through the small opening, which is so low that you need to crawl through it. Once you are inside, you find yourself sitting at a table at some time in your past. As you watch yourself sitting at the table, you can tell you're thinking about something that you very much wanted to make happen in your life. Something which actually did happen in your life. It might have been something you had hoped for that happened recently this week, or this month, or earlier this season, or perhaps earlier this year, maybe in the past few years, or maybe at a time much earlier in your life. Something which wound up happening just as you had hoped it would. But you were watching yourself at a time when you didn't know that what you were hoping for would be realized. It may have been getting accepted into a school, or getting a job that you wanted, or starting a relationship with someone you were attracted to. Or maybe it was leaving a hurtful relationship, or maybe it was getting a better place to live, or finishing a project, or having a child, or graduating from school, or just getting through the semester. It might have been helping a child, or planning an event, or helping someone you cared for get through a challenge. Or maybe it was overcoming your own challenge. Maybe getting out of debt, or dealing with your own emotional well-being. It doesn't have to have been a huge accomplishment. It could have been something small, but something which at some point seemed as if you wouldn't succeed, as if what you were trying to do was impossible. But then you did it. Whether or not you're realizing that goal led you to where you might have expected it to doesn't matter. What matters is that this goal, which at first seemed nearly unachievable, became realized by you. As you look at yourself sitting there, you close your eyes and see all that you did to make your goal become actualized. All of the paperwork, all of the thinking, the practicing, the dreaming, the visualizing, perhaps even praying, list making, planning, asking for advice, all of the phone calls, emails, traveling, meetings, all of the hope. You realize how hard you work to achieve your goal. You feel your power in a way that you often don't feel. Then you look at yourself again. But this time, you're thinking about something you also want to happen, something that hasn't happened yet, something for which you most deeply hope for today. You picture all you'll need to do to make what you now desire to be realized, and you remember how the types of things you'll need to do to make it happen are actually the same kinds of things you've done in the past that enabled you to achieve what you've hoped for in the past. As you recall the resources that you've managed to find inside yourself to deal with challenges in your past, you recognize that you already have inside of you all that you'll need to deal with the challenges and obstacles which stand between you and everything you hope to accomplish in the coming year. You stand right behind yourself and reach out and give yourself a hug of encouragement. As you sit at the table, you experience the hug, and it feels good and reassuring. And you're filled with a sense that the goals you hope to accomplish will happen. turn around and crawl out of the igloo. You stand back up into a blowing blizzard of snow. The snow feels refreshing and sharpens your senses. You close your eyes and feel yourself lifting up back to the sky. Way above the snow and far above the clouds. You look down and you see the earth. And you soar back to your part of the world, to your city or town, to your block, to your building that you're in right now. You look through the window and you see yourself sitting there meditating. You close your eyes and breathe in deeply. And feel your breath flowing into your lungs. And feel your heart beating. You feel strengthened and revitalized from your journey. And on this Christmas afternoon, you're filled with a sense of hopefulness and calm. Continue to breathe deeply.
For Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special, right here on 99.5
FM WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
Right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth, letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on with my life. Now you said all that, I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
It's not the glow you feel when snow appears. It's not the Christmas card you've sent for years. Not the joyful sound when sleigh bells ring. Or the merry songs children sing.
little gift you send. On Christmas Day, will not bring back the friend you've turned away. So may I suggest the secret of Christmas is not the things you do at Christmas time, but the Christmas things you do all year through.
The little gift you send on Christmas Day
will not bring back the friend you've turned away. So may I suggest the secret of Christmas is not the things you do at Christmas time, but the Christmas things you do.
You're listening to Naturalistic Support's Naturalistic Christmas Special. And we're here with Elaine and Sharon. You still with us, Elaine and Sharon?
Absolutely. Hi.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, good. This interview with Santa Claus was conducted by our former guest host, Steve DeVries, on Christmas Day, way back in 2011, in the good old days when Occupy Wall Street was still alive and Donald Trump's main involvement in politics was the loony insistence that President Obama was an undocumented alien. Oh, if we could only go back to that, right?
The good old days.
The good old days. Anyway, okay, we hope that you're feeling relaxed and refreshed from that meditation.
And
yeah, I did that too. That was good. All right, so here goes our interview with Santa Claus.
The story you're about to hear may shock you. It's certainly the last thing this reporter would have predicted after my first encounter with Santa and Mrs. Claus on the Christmas morning of 2003. I first became suspicious when Santa didn't return several of my calls for a follow-up interview in November 2007. I tried repeatedly, but to no avail. Then, in the early winter of 2008, the Claus's voicemail was no longer accepting messages. My subsequent attempts to reach the Clauses by text, by email, by faxing Santa's office, and even by sending a Western Union telegram were equally unsuccessful. But the more that Santa eluded me, the more I became determined to find him. During the run-up to the 2009 presidential election, I sent out feelers to the McCain-Palin handlers after hearing that Sarah Palin could almost see Russia from her home in Wasilla, Alaska. I thought, if she could do that, then perhaps she could see what was happening at the Santa Claus compound. Now, Sarah Palin, however, proved to be completely useless. But I remained undaunted. Then, in April of this year, in exchange for Scottish shortbread cookies, I received a tip from a U.S. postal worker that all of Santa's mail was mysteriously being directed to the largest U.S. postal depot in the state of New Jersey. One clue led to another, and eventually I tracked Santa to a shabby condominium building which didn't have a lobby in north central New Jersey. Despite their initial resistance, I ultimately convinced the Clauses to let me interview them on Christmas Day. The resulting interview, which you will now hear, reveals what happened to the Clauses and how it's caused them to avoid the public that adored them. When I arrived at the building, it was hard to believe that this is where the Clauses were staying.
Who is it?
Merry Christmas, Mrs. Claus. It's Steve DeVries from Equal Time for Free Thought. Today was when we agreed to do the interview.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Steve. I'll buzz you in. But I have to warn you, he's not in the best of moods.
I understand, Mrs. Claus.
Okay.
So I stepped into a dingy old elevator. And when the door finally closed, it proceeded very slowly to the fifth floor. I checked each door until I found the Claus's apartment. The door surprisingly unadorned.
Merry Christmas, Steve.
Merry Christmas, Mrs. Claus.
Come in. Santa, Steve DeVries is here.
I was surprised to see the Clauses in this small, sparsely furnished apartment. Santa was dressed only in a shabby red union suit and matted plush red slippers.
Yes, yes, on my way. Merry Christmas, Steve. I hope your way will find the place okay.
Good to see you, Santa. Merry Christmas. It's been a long time.
Yes, it has.
I'm a little confused, Santa. Aren't you supposed to be at the North Pole right now?
Well, you know, Steve, things aren't like they used to be. Times have been bad all around. There's been a great recession, you know. Don't you keep up?
Well, yes, of course, but Santa, you're supposed to
We're just a reflection of whatever exists, Steve. Just a reflection.
Well, what are you doing in this little apartment in New Jersey?
Oh, it's not so bad, Steve. The mail room is huge.
And that's a very important feature for Santa. He likes to know he's receiving all of his mail.
And sure enough, almost everywhere I looked in the apartment, I could see open envelopes and letters of varying sizes. Mostly handwritten in crayon, all addressed to Santa. But where are the elves and the reindeer and...
It's a long story, Steve.
Yes, well, I suppose we might as well get into it. You see, Steve, we had a bunch of really great years up at the North Pole. For years and years, we made millions of children happy on Christmas. But you know, you always feel as if you should do more. Reach ever more children, deliver ever more presents. But our factories were really at full capacity. So I began meeting with a group who said they'd be willing to invest some venture capital, but, oh, they had so many requirements.
Santa doesn't like anyone telling him what to do.
So I thought, look, we own the compound free and clear. Let's just get a new mortgage and finance the expansion ourselves. So that's what we did. We mortgaged the whole enchilada, and we're ready to go.
Except for those darn blueprints.
Steve, do you have any idea how difficult it is to find a good architect these days? 20-foot ceilings. The elves didn't need 20-foot ceilings.
Elves? Like it cozy.
And could you imagine how energy inefficient that would have been?
Well, I guess.
Preposterous. It would have been preposterous.
So while we searched for a better architect, we had to find a place for all of those development funds.
You know, Steve, I'm not a gambling man, so it made good sense to me when our financial advisors said, go conservative. Stick with the tried and true, the AAA rating, and so on. So we only invested with the best. Reliable companies with a proven track record, like Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers, AIG, GM, MF Global. And just to play it extra safe, we made sure to diversify by putting a good amount into some rock-solid derivatives and some Greek government bonds. Well, I guess I don't have to tell a smart guy like you what happened next.
What happened next?
What happened next was the bottom fell out. Jeez, where have you been, Steve? Under a rock? Everything went bust, and we were all leveraged out.
We should have never trusted those bankers. I wanted to put the money into the Bailey Savings and Loan, where it probably would have been safer.
Well, then it started. Mortgage defaults, margin calls, the whole thing collapsed like a broken chimney. Overnight, we were upside down and backwards.
That's when we made the deal.
Ah, yes, the deal.
deal?
Yes, the deal. You see, Steve, Disney had been after us for a long, long time. Fancy dinners, all expense paid trips to Orlando, after the Christmas deadline, of course.
But we always told them no.
But now we didn't have a choice.
No, Santa, you don't mean...
Yep, we leased them the whole compound. The workshop, Santa's village, all of it, kit and caboodle.
What, the elves and the reindeer too?
Well, no, not exactly. The reindeer negotiated their contract with the Disney people directly.
We hear they actually did very nicely for themselves.
And the elves, well, at first they thought they might as well just retire.
But then they learned that their pension fund had gone belly up.
Yes, that was particularly sad. It seems the whole thing had been invested in a scheme to develop this parcel of property just off the coast of Greenland. The plan was to develop it into a high-end retirement community with 24-hour bingo and a Walgreens.
Little did they know that the development site was melting.
Oh, such a shame. At first, they tried adjusting the plans to make the facility just a wee bit smaller, then a little smaller again, and then yet again. But that darn site just kept shrinking faster than they could keep up.
So what happened?
Well, like so many other retirees, the elves have to keep working.
For Disney?
No. I mean, yes, Disney made them an offer, but elves aren't actors.
They like to work with their hands.
And the only thing they could find around these parts, if they could find anything at all, would be office work. But elves can't work in an office.
Elves like to make things.
So where did they go?
China.
Amazing. So what happened with you?
Well, Christy and I weren't sure where we'd go.
Santa would never work for Disney.
Out of the question!
And that's when we got the call.
The call?
That's right, Steve. We received a call from a production company that does stuff for Bravo and Wii, and they said they wanted us for a new reality TV series, Beyond the Pole.
Really?
Oh yes, Santa and I were always getting TV offers.
Remember how hard they tried to get us to anchor the last Winter Olympics?
I certainly do.
Anyways, we were a little skeptical about the show at first.
The plot called for us to move in with the Abramowitzes.
The Abramowitzes?
A nice Hasidic couple living in Borough Park, Brooklyn.
But the timing was right. I mean, with Disney taking over everything and our not having any other place to go, we thought, what the heck? We did have to do a bit of negotiating, though. I mean, Hasidic people have some really strict dietary laws.
And Santa loved his Christmas morning sausages.
Yes, but that was before I tried that lox and bagel stuff. Took me right off the sausages.
Good thing, too. Apparently the sausages would have been a deal breaker.
Ah, the Abramowitzes. We had some really good times with them, right, Christy? And I really enjoyed those long Shabbat night discussions that would start at the dinner table and continue way into the night. So surely, Abramowitz...
Please, Santa, call me Mordechai.
Fine, Mordechai. Surely you don't believe that all of the dead will literally rise and then exist forevermore in some messianic kingdom of perfection.
Well, Santa, that's what's written in the Torah. So that's what I believe.
But you're such an intelligent man, Mordechai.
This has nothing to do with intelligence, Santa.
Rivka is right. It's all about faith.
But don't the facts matter to you, Mordechai?
Certainly, facts are important. But you can't live without faith.
Well, Christy and I have somehow managed.
Oh, come on, Santa. It's obvious that you have at least as much faith as anyone else.
Oh? What makes you say that?
A man flying through the blazing snow, taking his chances, landing 9 reindeer and a sleigh full of toys on how many wet and icy roofs in a night? That's faith.
Actually, Mordechai, I don't think that's about faith at all.
Oh, no?
No. You see, Santa looks very closely at the roofs. He observes how icy they are and takes notice of their angle. And then he makes an educated decision.
So you're telling me if Santa doesn't like the roof, he wouldn't land on it anyway?
Absolutely not, Morehart. I mean, there's a reindeer to think about.
No, so when you don't like a roof, where do you land?
Well, usually in the driveway.
In the driveway? Oh, no.
And if the driveway's occupied, sometimes I have to double park.
You're lucky you don't get a ticket.
Especially here in New York.
Oh, I get lots of tickets. Especially here in New York.
Ice Santa, you're such a mishugana.
Oh, and the jokes we would tell. And then the young groom says, but Rabbi, I don't understand. If a husband and wife can make love in all of those other positions, why not standing up? And then the rabbi says, could lead to dancing. Now, could you pass me another one of those, what do you call them, snowballs?
Matzo balls, Santa, matzo balls.
But not long after we got the first three episodes in the can, the show's producer came in from L.A. to tell us about a terrible idea that he said would help us pick up a broader audience. He said the show had fantastic chemistry. It's gold, he kept saying, gold. And all that the show needed to make it cutting edge was just one little addition.
What was that?
Vampires.
Vampires?
Yes, vampires. That's what he said. Something about a distant relative of the Abramowitzes who turns up from the old country and comes to live with us, and then...
One by one, everyone in the house turns into a vampire.
No.
Yes. I mean, the vampire idea was ridiculous. The Abramowitzes were extremely devout and exceptionally fussy about what they ate.
Steve, did you know that human blood isn't kosher?
I really didn't.
Well, apparently neither did the show's producers.
So what happened?
Well, then L.A. came back with a second proposal, but from the Abramowitz's perspective, it wasn't any better than the first.
In their second proposal, during the Jewish holiday of Purim, the Abramowitzes would somehow get things mixed up and accidentally bring home a zombie. It was another idea that would have desecrated their dietary laws. Steve, did you know that human brains aren't kosher?
No, I didn't really know that either.
Well, the Abramowitzes said they just couldn't be part of a program where so much of the storyline involved acts they considered unclean.
And that was really the end of Beyond the Pole.
The producers in L.A. said we weren't cooperating, and they pulled the plug on the whole project.
And to this day, not one episode's been aired.
What a shame.
And I loved getting to know Rivka. She had such interesting perspectives. But one night my talk with Rivka got me upset. Rivka, who are all these children in the pictures?
Oh, those? Those are our grandchildren.
All of these?
Yes, we're a big family. But Mamala, no one has more children than you and Santa. Ay, what a joy it must be to see them all fast asleep in their beds.
But it's Santa who gets to see the children, not me.
Why is that? Don't you go with him to deliver the Hanukkah gelt? I mean the presents?
No, Rivka. Santa doesn't bring me.
He doesn't? What?
Santa has never brought me with him.
Oh, Bubala, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
That talk with Rivka really made me think. All of these years, and all I get to do is stay home and drink eggnog. It was as if a nor'easter had blown right through me. I told Santa I could never go back to the way things were.
And I suppose I didn't quite get what you meant, because at the time I said, good thing, because at this rate we'll never get the property back from Disney. But as it turned out, Disney was the least of our problems. Well, at least that's what Olga and Eric told us.
Olga and Eric?
Yes, Olga and Eric Fran Frickens, the world-renowned marital counselors.
All right, Christine, I'd like you to tell Santa how you feel.
Okay, Santa, I think
not
that...
Not what you think, how you feel.
All right. Santa, I feel that
Good, good. Go on.
Well, Nikki, I feel that even though I understand that you've always done certain things
a certain way... No, no, no. My God, Christine, do you not know what a feeling is? Has this man so forced you into the shadows that you've forgotten how to feel?
Well, I really don't think so.
Of course you don't, dear. Here, let me help you. Nicholas!
Yes?
You are a thoughtless, self-centered, big, red, pompous buffoon.
Oh, my!
What do you say to that, Nicholas?
I don't know what to say. Christy, I didn't think
Excuse me, Santa. I think you better let me get in here. Christy, you are a wheedling, manipulative, castrating witch. Your words, they're like a festering disease, and they suck the life out of everything. The only thing more nauseating than your loathsome bovine features is the revolting sound of your voice.
Good God, man! What the hell are you saying?
Nicholas, you are a bombastic monument to your own self-importance. A bloated, dreary, corpulent, patriarchal pig! The enormity of your preposterous ego is outsized only by the span of your repulsive, pendulous gut!
Olga, I really don't think I feel that way about Santa at all.
Well, of course you don't think you do, darling. They never do. The man has you so under his control that you don't even realize how angry you are. It's the classic subliminal spousal annihilation disorder. And I might add that it's all greatly detailed in our book, Hating to Love, by Olga and Eric von Frickens.
And now you can get it in hardcover or paperback.
No, wait a darn minute, Olga.
Santa, don't worry. I'm right here for you. Christine, I will take no more of your interminable, venomous, grinding derision, you vicious, petulant skank.
Oh, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Stop it, both of you. Stop it right now. Christine, we might not always have the best communication, but this is nuts. What is it that you need from me?
Well, what I want is not to be left at home anymore.
You mean?
Yes, I too want to gaze upon all of the children while they're nestled all snug in their beds.
While visions of sugar plums dance in their heads? Is that what you mean?
Yes, that's what I want.
Then that's what I want, too.
Oh, Nick.
Oh, Christy.
Don't look now, Olga, but I think I see two people in this room who've just had a breakthrough.
Yes, that's the Fran Frickens for you.
Fixed us right up.
Genius, sheer genius.
So then, how did you wind up in this apartment?
Oh, the Fran Frickens helped us out with that as well.
The apartment belongs to one of their patients, Ryan Balzac. Balzac's an architect who actually lives with his boyfriend, but he just doesn't want to let go of this place until he's really certain that the relationship is going to work out, and who could blame him?
Well, I guess that makes sense.
Steve, they've been together for 15 years.
Oh, I see.
Well, anyhow, Balzac said we could stay here. And unless, of course, he needed to move back in. But I doubt that would happen. I mean, after all, he's getting help from the very best.
The very best. And you know what's the best thing about this apartment, Steve?
What?
We're just blocks away from the largest postal facility in all of New Jersey.
Yeah, I imagine you must get a ton of mail.
More than a ton, Steve. Far more.
It's actually a bit daunting at times, but we make sure every single letter is read.
My goodness, your eyes must get tired.
Oh, not my eyes. Christie's.
You don't read the letters, Santa?
Well, used to, but now without my spectacles, can't make out the print anymore. So now I just listen while Christie reads.
What happened to your spectacles?
Well, one time I had this little perky fella on my lap who just kept slapping me in the head.
Why was he slapping you?
Well, he was a rather clever lad, and I think he was trying to determine if I was real. So he just kept swinging until he knocked the old spectacles clear off my face, and the thing broke in pieces.
I really thought that kid was way too old.
Oh, come on. The child couldn't have been a day older than 12.
12's too old, Santa.
Well, I suppose these days they are maturing early.
Why don't you just get new glasses?
I'd love to, Steve, but for that I'd need a new prescription. And we lost our vision insurance even before we lost our medical coverage.
Those damn high premiums.
I'm afraid I know what you mean. So do you really read every letter?
Oh, yes, Steve. And you should see some of these.
I'll tell you, they can send chills up your spine. Why don't you read them a couple, Christy? Start with that kid whose dad is still overseas at war.
Here, listen to this.
Dear Santa.
How are you,
and Mrs. Claus? This year, the thing I want the most is for you to bring my dad to us. I would like some toys also. I want my dad home more than anything. Love, Zach Jones, third grade.
Or this one. Dear Santa.
Dear Santa, my daddy is back from Afghanistan, but he can't run around and play with me anymore because he got hurt and his legs don't work. All I want is for him to be able to play with me again like he used to. Sailor Horan 85.
Or this one.
Dear Santa, my mom was pepper sprayed and hit in her stomach when she was protesting. I want a toy, but what I want most of all is for her to get better. Jenna Ederle, age 10.
And this. Dear Santa,
that we had to move out of our house because we were upside down. We are staying with my aunt, but I miss my house. On Christmas, could you please get us a new place to live? Eddie Langston, third grade.
Wow.
Wow is right.
Things are really bad out there, Steve. Really bad.
Haven't seen anything like it in the last 80 years.
Yes, and 80 years ago, at least there was a government that was really trying to do something about it. In that way, this is much worse.
That's true. So, was last night the first Christmas Eve you both went out together?
Well, of course it would have been if we had gone out. From now on, I wouldn't have it any other way. But, like I said before, right now, Santa's workshop and all the rest are still being leased to Disney.
And the elves are still off working in China.
And the reindeer, they're under contract to Disney as well.
So, you're not giving out presents this year?
No, I'm afraid not, Steve.
But what about all those children who need to feel loved?
Well, as I've said before, Steve, we're only a reflection of what exists. With endless wars, rushing poverty, homelessness on the rise, people out of work, masses of people losing their health insurance, parents having to leave their kids alone most of the time while they struggle to pay the bills by working a second and a third job, and with brutal police pushback against peaceful protesters.
And with the wealthiest people determined not only to not contribute, they're actually pushing harder than ever to take even more for themselves.
Until some of that changes, I'm afraid we're grounded. Now, we still make a rare appearance every now and again, Thanksgiving and what have you. I mean, there's still a little love out there, but nothing close to what's needed.
But isn't this the time when the love you symbolize is needed most?
Well, that might well be, but you know the old expression, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
That's actually a Beatles song, Santa.
Yes, that's right. Hey, whatever happened to those guys? They really had the right idea.
So that's it? No more Santa Claus? But what about all the letters and all of those children?
Steve, can't you see? If all of those children don't have people around who love them, then I'm sad to say, they're not going to be loved.
But Santa...
Oh, Santa, my butt. Come on, man. I mean, it's not as if we're real. And there's some serious limitations to being make-believe.
We're just a mirror, Steve.
And what would you expect to see in a mirror if there was nothing in front of it?
Nothing, I guess.
Nothing.
I think I get it. The love that you represent has got to exist in reality to begin with, because you're only real if people make you real.
Brilliant!
Now you got it, son.
Yes, but...
But what, boy?
Well, I'm just wondering, I understand what you mean about reflecting back the love that's already there. But the magic of Christmas and Santa Claus isn't only about love. You also represent hope for a better tomorrow. Where's that going to come from?
You hear that, Christy? Steve is worried about hope.
You want to see hope, Steve? Then you'd better catch the 12 o'clock bus to Port Authority with me and Santa and come with us to Zuccotti Park.
Really? You go to Zuccotti Park?
Absolutely. We go there regularly to help out however we can.
And we're still really ticked off about how they destroyed our stuff. You coming with us, Steve?
Yes! And so, the three of us headed over to Zuccotti Park, where the Clauses helped serve food and sang songs and told lots of jokes.
Santa is watching! Santa is watching! Santa Claus is watching!
And I'm really glad I got to see it, because seeing them there, along with everyone else, was a vision that left me with hope. This has been Steve DeVries for Equal Time for Free Thought, wishing you a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
When Jesus makes a call, for others it's a time to stress goodwill and peace for all. But advertisers tell us it needs Santa's at the wall. Now it's time we decided for ourselves, for ourselves.
My check, my check.
Equal Time for Free Thoughts Naturalistic Christmas Special, right here on 99.5
FM WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
And we're back. Sharon, Elaine, you're with us?
Hi. Hey. Yeah, sure. Right
yes.
here.
Still yeah. here.
It was quite a trip.
Yeah, quite a trip. That, so if you enjoyed our Santa interview or our Christmas meditation or even our space science interview with Dr. Chris Impey, give us a call and tell us. Our number is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. And let's lower this a little bit here. Were either of you able to follow the meditation?
Sure. For part of the time.
Okay, yeah.
That was really beautiful.
Yeah.
Because that was a true journey. It felt as if that was going to the North Pole, too, to that igloo.
Yeah. Yeah, Sharon, we had some Beatles in there for you.
I love the Beatles in there. And I have to say, that first song when you do, when we start at 2 o'clock, you know,
yeah.
gives me chills every time. It's beautiful.
That's lovely.
Yeah, it's particularly useful in the summer.
It's an emotional response, Arnell.
Yeah. And callers, you can also call in to tell us how you're doing this Christmas afternoon. How you're coping with this potentially stressful holiday. There are a lot of people feeling lonely on Christmas. And it can be hard for some. So if you're feeling any of that stuff and you want to talk about it, give us a call at 212-209-2877. And also, if you want to call in and tell us about a child, because Christmas is very much about our hope that we place in children to deliver us, to be the deliverers, not a supernatural deliverer, magical deity child, but every child has that incredible potential to be the hope for tomorrow. So if you want to give a call out, a shout out to a child, or tell us about a child who's special to you, either in your family or a neighbor or in your community, give us. Sharon, you were a teacher. You saw many children over the years.
I saw many children over the years, yes. I worked for 33 years as a New York City special education teacher.
Yeah. And did you do other things beside the special education, or was that where you were primarily focused?
I was primarily in special ed. The first 20 years, I was a classroom special education teacher. And then my last 11 years, I was what they call special education teacher support services, where I was working with regular ed children who did have, like, a diagnosis of attention deficit or a speech issue, and I would work with them in their regular ed class.
Right. Okay, so we do have a caller on the line. Let's see if we can get that caller. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Hello?
Merry, merry, merry Christmas. Ho, 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 ho.
You're exactly
what I needed to hear today. God bless you.
Oh, thank you. Who? What's your name?
I'm Veronica.
Hi, Veronica. Where are you calling from?
West 73rd Street, Manhattan, center of the universe. Oh, oh,
nice.
Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah. So are you home alone, Veronica?
Yes, I am. Home alone, and Macaulay Culkin is nowhere to be found.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's good that we could connect with each other on Christmas Day for sure. It's this naturalistic support community is there. So did you listen to any of our features?
Yeah. I started with science. I loved it.
Yeah. Good. So how are you feeling today, Veronica? How's it going?
I've been working through a lot of things and at hitting a wall, because some things you know you have to change, but you don't want to, and you just hold it off and hold it off and hold it off. And today I put my foot down and then I just said, you are going to sit and you are going to enjoy the solitude. And the first thing that happened, as I was leaving the building to get a cup of coffee, I heard a woman yelling in the elevator, and within 45 minutes we got her out of the elevator. And she threw her arms around me, and she said, when I heard your voice, I knew who you were, because you said you wouldn't leave me until it was out.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, my gosh, Veronica, that's extraordinary. That's what happened to you today?
Yeah, it was great. It was just great. And then
what a Christmas rescue. Good Lord.
Yeah.
Christmas you were the Christmas rescue. Miracle.
Yeah, exactly.
But she recognized my voice because I just kept saying, I won't leave you. I won't leave you until you're out. And we got it done. And then the next thing I said was, I'm not going to do anything or be anywhere with anybody that I don't want to be with. Today is just a happy day for all the things that I want to do. And the whole day just opened up like that. The right person called to wish me happy Christmas. Another one called to say she was sorry about something. And I'm sitting here making this health change, and I just turned on the radio, and I just loved your show today. It was such a mix of everything I wanted to hear, and how can you go wrong with the Beatles? It's all about love.
Veronica, thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it. Oh, Merry Christmas to you. And listen again. We're on every week from 2 to 3 on Wednesdays. So tune into Naturalistic
Never
Support.
Miss you. God bless you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Veronica. That was amazing.
Okay.
Wonderful.
We have another caller on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Yeah, who's calling?
Hi, my name is Arnesto Miranda.
Arnesto, hi, and where are you calling from?
Well, I'm living in the Bronx, but I was originally born from, I'm from Honduras.
Uh-huh, okay. So how are you doing today, Arnesto?
Doing fine, sir. How are you guys doing? I love your program. It was really great.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was driving take my phone home, and that's when I was switching the channels, and I started like hearing the Santa interview. I was like, wow, this is interesting. So I paid that attention to it, and it was fun. It was a couple of things that made me think. Thought hard, happy times, happy moments, and it was great. Especially
how old is your son?
He's 7.
Oh, that's such a great age.
So, yeah, when they say about Santa getting tickets in New York, I kind of related to him.
Yeah, the tickets, for sure. That's a story of my life.
It was a nice interview. I loved it. It was a great program. I got to hear the last part. So, it was great. It was great.
Osano, thank you so much for calling. We really appreciate it.
Okay, so, well, have a Merry Christmas to all of you guys in there. And it was nice talking
to you. Merry Christmas
and
to you and to your son.
And tune in on Wednesdays from 2 to 3 for our regular show.
Okay, I will. Thank you. Because, I kind of got this station by, I don't know if it was Eric, because the thing is that I was having problems with my car yesterday. So I took it to the mechanic, and they kind of did something with the battery. So when the car came back again, it was just this station. I was like, let me keep it.
Oh, that's a good mechanic. That's our WBAI mechanic. That's good.
But it was a great day, so I'm keeping it. It was great. I love
thank you, my friend. Yeah, and if you need to find us again, it's 99.5 in case you decide to switch the station at some point. We're 99.5.
Okay, I will. Thank you for your time.
All right.
Have a great Christmas.
Bye-bye. Bye. Merry Christmas. And I think, I'm not sure if we still have a third caller holding. Let's see. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Yes, you certainly do have a third caller. Hi, this is Maya.
Hey, Maya. Merry Christmas.
Hi, Maya.
To you. I had some scramble to catch your program because I'm a night owl on the coast to coast AM from 1 a.m. to 5 p.m. So I set my alarm for 3 because I certainly didn't want to miss your program, but somehow drifted off to sleep again. So missed the Christmas meditation, unfortunately, but did catch the great story of the Santa based in New Jersey.
Yes.
So
thank you.
I just want to thank you for your program. I guess I, as I go into the new year, I have some resolution to unravel some profound estrangement from the beloved progressive, inclusive, radical, getting to the root community. So I'm looking forward to untangling that. But can only wish the warmest greetings, Merry Christmas, the best in the new year, health, wealth, and divine self-expression. Love you guys. I hope I can get on the archive at some point and listen to the Christmas meditation. Thank
yes.
you, thank you, thank you. And the thank you is spelled T-H hyphen capital A-N-K-H. Okay,
I like that.
Thank you, Maya.
Thank you, Maya. And definitely get the meditation from the archive, because the whole special is going to be there. So, yeah, I hope you can catch it. Thanks for calling, Maya. Merry Christmas.
Take good care. Love you guys. Peace and love.
You too. And our number is 212-209-2877. And you can give us a call. Tell us what you thought of the show so far. And what you're doing on this Christmas day. Those are some nice calls, weren't they?
They were wonderful.
Yeah.
That story about the rescue from the elevator, I mean, talk about being where you're meant to be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it you know, we're so, and people forget how we're built to take care of each other. You know,
yeah.
we have neurotransmitters that they respond when we do nice things for each other. You know, they've done fMRIs on people who holding doors open for someone else. And when they do, they get a burst of dopamine. And the person who gets the door held open for them, they get it too. So it's kind of like we're really built for being there for each other.
Yeah, you see it even in babies.
Yeah.
They laugh when they see a baby laughing, and they cry when they see another baby crying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Definitely. Babies have a great sense of fairness. They've done lots of studies where they've shown babies scenes, like really young babies, like 3 months old, scenes with puppets, and one puppet is being mean to another puppet, and then they give the baby a choice. They actually bring the baby the puppets to play with, and the baby always picks the puppet that was nice, the helper puppet. Doesn't pick the mean puppet. So yeah, we our view of human nature from our culture is so we see each other as so adversarial, but we're really not like that. And that's an important part of a naturalistic understanding and a naturalistic Christmas, recognizing that we're not what they tell us we are. You know, the adversarial narrative works really well when you have an ultra-capitalistic society, but when you really recognize that we're built for cooperation and we're built for caring for each other, it really kind of makes you wonder, well, does what we're doing to each other in this capitalistic society make sense? You know, it's not what we really are built for.
I like to use the word miracles, because I do like the word miracles, but
yeah.
Don't mean it in a, you know...
supernatural.
Supernatural way, right. Yeah. In fact, I call them humanist miracles. You know, that time when you're not feeling maybe so good, and then a friend gives you a call, or you get an email, and, you know, or that call we just got today from the woman who saved that other woman in the elevator. That is a huge humanist miracle.
Absolutely.
In my opinion.
And you know what? We have another call on the line. Let's take that one. This is WBAI. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes. Hi. Good. Who's calling?
This is Barbara from Yonkers.
Barbara from Yonkers. Thank you for giving us a call today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I just wanted to share my particular
I have a saying. I don't do holidays. A life lived right, every day is a holiday. I thought you might have.
That's a great attitude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that is a good attitude, except of course that, you know, life gets in the way sometimes, and it's, you know, I think in one of the earlier interviews with Santa, he says that, you know, if people say let's make Christmas every day like Christmas, then no day is like Christmas. So yeah, there are arguments you could have either way on that.
No arguing, just sharing.
Yeah, no, definitely appreciate that.
I think you
can
make a lot of days feel like Christmas when you do that kind of sharing, when you have those moments of connection.
That's true.
Thank you for your lovely show. Have a great day.
Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. 212-209-2877. Give us a call. Tell us what you thought of the show, or tell us what you're doing right now. Or even give a shout out to a child, which we haven't gotten one of those today. So if you got one of those, give us that. And those are some nice callers. But yeah, that rescue is pretty impressive.
Right.
You know, I know we've been marking the light and the shade and the different aspects of Christmas.
Yep.
And we're moving into Hanukkah. And as we've been sharing all of these, the different aspects of Christmas that touch all of us, whether we're Christian or not,
yeah,
I think the aspects of Hanukkah are open to everybody too. The ideas of sharing and joy and courage.
Yeah.
It's a, the feeling can carry on the whole week.
Yeah, I agree. We have another caller on the line. Let's take that. Hello? You're on the air. Hello?
Yes, hello.
Yeah, who's calling?
My name's Bob.
Hey, Bob, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Central America, Costa Rica.
Oh, wow. That's
beautiful.
Great. How are you doing today?
Yes. Oh, it's mixed. But
yeah.
I'm very happy. Yes, listening to your show is quite a nice experience. And I did, the first time I heard your show was just last week. I'm by myself other than some dogs and cats, and I've been working on water problems today, and they seem fixed, and I'm surrounded by nature, all kinds of things that make me happy. But your show is actually quite uplifting. And I really appreciate so much what I heard. I didn't hear all of it. The science part was amazing. Yeah. I do have a scientific mind, I guess. But the spiritual part that you bring into it, just really, because so many of the experiences that you've talked about, I share. Like just that little part you said recently about opening the door for somebody gives you that shot of dopamine.
Yeah.
And that's so true. I mean, I go out of my way to do things for animals, bugs, and other humans, of course.
Yeah.
And there's so many things you said. Yeah, I just started listening to WBAI, because I have a family, my son and grandchildren and his Costa Rican wife. Well, they're bicultural. And they grew up here in Costa Rica, basically. And I spent a lot of time with them growing up. My wife and I, pretty much, my kids were both working, my daughter-in-law. I have my daughter-in-law, and so the part about the kids and the time, I'm 75.
Yeah.
So I've had a lot of Christmases. I don't really belong to any particular religion. I've tried them all. And basically, they're all the same if you get to the roots of it, which is, there's so many ways to say it. And, you know, treat other people like you want them to treat you. It's one way.
Yeah.
But I really like the show. I did miss the last part of the tale of Santa in New Jersey.
Yeah, well, you could catch it in the archive, you know. You could go to the archive after this show. We'll be there, and you could listen to whatever part you missed.
Oh, yeah, I do know that.
It's so cool to have this connection to Costa Rica, from snowy New York, New Jersey, to where you are. That's exciting. Thank you for linking us to somewhere warmer.
Yeah, just tell us what the weather is like there, Bob, today.
Actually, because of climate change, is my belief, it's been one of the wettest, latest. Normally, at this time of the year, it's what we call summer, which is our dry season, where, of course, not like in New York, people go to the beach this time of the year. The next 3 months, so it's really the beginnings of our summer, even though they're the shortest days of years and all, but recently, like today, was just haven't seen the sun at all. Of course, it's warmer than there, but it's kind of cool because we aren't prepared for that kind of weather.
You know,
the house I lived in is quite open to the element.
Wow.
Anyway, no, I just wanted to say how much I appreciate the Naturalistic Support Show, and especially this special.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for the call. Appreciate you.
Yeah, all right. I appreciate you guys, too, and keep it up.
Thank you.
Bob,
we
thank
will.
Thank you.
We're going to try. Until they pull us off and say no. Thanks, Bob. So, yeah, that was a nice call. Get some nice calls today.
That's great, yeah. We had some wonderful callers. Such different versions of Christmas Day.
And Bob must be listening on the Internet because, obviously, you're not going to get WBAI down there, but on streaming live, we have lots of listeners. And if you are streaming us, why don't you call us to tell us where you're streaming from. We're at 212-209-2877. And we're pretty much out of time. You know that, Sharon?
Yeah.
So, you know, let's just say that we need a quick pitch for your support. This Day of Giving is a perfect time to give a donation to WBAI while your tax-deductible contribution can still be applied to 2024. So if you've enjoyed the show, please go to wbai.org, buddy.wbai.org, buddy.wbai.org, or give to WBAI.org, that's G-I-V-E, number 2, WBAI.org, or call us at 833-922-4692, 833-922-4692, and make a donation in the name of Naturalistic Support. All right, you guys, we're gonna wrap it up right now.
Oh, thanks, Arnell. That was fun.
Yep.
That was fun. Thank you. That was a lovely way to spend a Christmas afternoon, and now it's time to light the Hanukkah candles.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Naturalistic Support's Naturalistic Christmas Special, and we hope it made you smile. I'm Arnell Duray. Today we're joined by Elaine Durbach and Sharon Stanley. Thank you guys for being with us. And also thanks to Reg Johnson at the board. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can find us in the archive at WBAI.org and also at EqualTimeForFreeThought.org. Join us again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for our regular Naturalistic Support Show, when we're going to talk about New Year's Day and how we can make the most of 2025. Stay where you are, because coming right up is a best-of episode of Advocating for Justice with Arthur Schwartz. And remember, try to be kind because you never really know what someone else is going through. Merry Christmas. Good night.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Good night.
Someday at Christmas.